You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 193 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Dark Knight's Death Metal number 1, Strange Adventures number 2, Superman number 22, The Green Lantern season 2 number 4, Wonder Woman number 757, Young Justice number 15, and Stargirl season 1 episode 4, Wildcat. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC News. DC announces its biggest ever online event. It will be like a virtual con. The Mega Fan event begins August 22nd at 10 a.m. PDT and will be accessible for 24 hours at dcfandom.com. The event will feature 6 different virtual areas, each with their own full programming. We will be getting announcements from WB Games, film and TV, and comics, including Aquaman, Batman, Batwoman, Black Adam, Black Lightning, the DC Superhero Girls, DC's Legends Tomorrow, Stargirl, Doom Patrol, The Flash, Harley Quinn, Lucifer, Pennyworth, Shazam, The Snyder Cut, Suicide Squad, Supergirl, Superman and Lois, Teen Titans Go!, Titans, Watchmen, Young Justice Outsiders, and Wonder Woman 1984.
This is pretty exciting. I think they're going to ultimately end up with a bigger audience than they would have.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you're right about that. And with it, you know, with it being just DC, they'll draw in all the DC crowd for that. And maybe then maybe some more, so. Because I'll bet there'll be people who want to check out TV and movie stuff. They're not into comics. They'll come get on here just to check stuff out, too.
Yeah, I agree. I'm excited to hear some of the movie news stuff. Like, Black Adam is something I've been pretty vocal about being excited for. Especially because it's been in the works since before Shazam. So The Rock has been signed on to play Black Adam for like most of my 20s. so I'm excited to see that hopefully get off the ground next year, I'm assuming. I think it was supposed to probably be this year, but that ain't happening now. So.
Yeah. I'm curious. They had Doom Patrol on here, but Doom Patrol starts this week. Later this week.
But so. They list Watchmen, though, also. So I think it's just got some stuff like, they clearly got stuff for fans of things that have already been made.
Yeah, I guess you're right, which is fine. So who knows? Maybe they might have some. They might have panels at this thing too. So
I'm kind of curious what all it's going to be. Is it going to be like, are we going to basically be watching like a Zoom conference call? Are they going to? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I assume we're going to. I'm hoping we're going to get we'll probably get some sort of Wonder Woman footage, right? Or a trailer or something.
Yeah, I'm sure of it. I think if this is successful, we're going to start seeing, well, DC will obviously do it again. I have a feeling this is going to start taking the place of Comic-Con. if it's successful. They, you know, like DC, they might not even show up at the Comic-Con in the future. They might just do this online thing.
I hope that's not the case, though. That's, I mean, most people end up getting this information online because they don't attend, but, like, I don't know. It's not the same thing. I don't know. There's a reason cons are still a popular thing to go to. They're fun to go to. It's fun to be around people that are into the same things as you and getting a chance to, not for everybody, but, you know, some people like to go and actually, like, get autographs and pictures with celebrities and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. I hope it doesn't fully replace conventions.
Oh, I don't think it'll fully replace conventions. Conventions will still be around, even if they're not exactly the same.
Right. Well, but yeah, but like we know, like you mentioned, Marvel Studios, at least, not necessarily the comics, but they've kind of removed themselves, unless I'm wrong about this, they've removed themselves, right, in the past from Comic-Con?
Have they? I can't remember.
I think they did, and I might be incorrect about that, but I think it was in part because they're wanting to kind of do almost like streaming services, like they want to just do their own thing where it's all about them. And it's just like, that's not. It's frustrating because, like, I get it for them business wise, it's probably better, but like for fans of comics, it's not. And I can see DC doing the same, like going the same route. Like you said, if this is successful, I could see them thinking, like, oh, we don't need to pay to have a presence at Comic-Con, but like that would be a mistake, I think.
So either way, we'll have to see how things go. I mean, I don't know. Going forward, I don't know how things are going to be in the future, honestly. Yeah.
The other thing I wonder is, I think this would be a really cool thing if they had a lot of footage for stuff, to be honest with you. And I wonder how possible that's going to be.
Yeah.
I do worry that it's going to end up being like interesting to some people like us who are really plugged into and interested in comic book news and stuff like that. But for other people that are going for like Black Adam's not going to have anything, right? At best, it's going to be The Rock popping on for 5 minutes and being like, yeah, really excited to play this character, which is nice. But like, we've also seen him say that
before. Yeah.
The other times.
Yeah. I guess we'll just,
not to be a Debbie Downer. I think that you and I will find and other comic book fans will have a lot to be interested in with that. But I'm curious to see if they will have enough to have a wider appeal beyond the like hardcore comic book news people.
I guess we'll just have to wait and see on that.
Yeah.
All right. Coming up in other DC news, Spotify, Warner Brothers, and DC have announced a new multi-year deal to produce and distribute an original slate of narrative scripted podcasts. That's cool. Doing a podcast is going to reach out to a larger audience that not necessarily would read a comic, but they definitely listen to a podcast of one.
I'm interested to see how this does, how this project does. I don't know, I guess, enough about that kind of podcast. Like, obviously, there's the kind that you and I do, right? I feel like the most common kind, which is people, like, you know, conversing with each other. So I don't know, or somebody giving I don't know what the word that I'm looking for, like nonfiction, I guess. And so I'll be curious to see I know they exist, but I'd be curious to see how a like purely fictional podcast would do.
It's good. It'd be like an audiobook is what it'd be.
Right. So like, why? I don't know. That's what I'm saying. So like, I don't know how that sell goes. Just because it's called a podcast, does it sell better? Maybe it does.
I don't know. And
I am truly ignorant in this. I'm thinking out loud, like, I'm curious to see how it does because I really don't know. You know what I mean? I don't know enough to know how that's going to do.
Yeah. The other thing I've been wondering about this, podcasts are usually free. So I'm wondering, is this going to be free? Because if not, it's basically going to be an audiobook, but
I mean, to be frank with you, if it's not free, it's gonna bomb.
Yeah,
let's be real.
But it'll be on Spotify, so you'll be able to listen to it with commercials. Is probably what it's gonna be.
And that'll be fine. But you know what I mean. But like, if it's locked behind a paywall, it's not. It'll do. Some people will buy it, but you know what I mean. There's no way.
Yeah. Who knows? It may end up behind where you have to get the subscription, the premium Spotify.
Which a lot of people do have Spotify, so.
Yeah. Shoot, I use Spotify. I use the free Spotify, but.
right, but so that wouldn't be bad. But yeah, like you said, I am curious to see how it does.
Yeah.
I think it's a really interesting project. One thing I do like is that DC does seem to be exploring new things to do with their IP.
Yeah.
Which I think is, honest, frankly, I think it's necessary, because I think if you just stick to, I mean, like, there is something to be said to be focusing on something, but like, that's also how you make yourself a dinosaur.
Yeah. All right. And other DC news. DC is offering a free souvenir playing cards with the purchase of each issue of Geoff Johns and Jason Fabok's Batman, the Three Jokers Prestige Limited series. But of course, it's while supplies last. Yeah, that's cool.
I think it's cool. I think it gives another reason for people to... They're clearly looking for this to do well, physical copy-wise. I mean, that's, I think, one of the reasons you do a prestige format in the first place, right?
Yeah.
So, I think it's cool. I would probably be interested in that. I don't know if, like, you know, in a city like we're in, I guess... On the one hand, the chances of something like that being available are higher, but also there are more people in the area that would be more interested in it, too.
Yep, that's for sure. All right, up next for DC News. DC has announced that the Walmart 100-page giant anthology titles will be replaced by shrink-wrap collections of recent DC comic books from the DC Universe. Each pack of four is priced at $8.98 and includes a collectible backing board featuring a different DC superhero. When joined together, they will form an image of the Justice League by Ivan Reis. The first wave of titles has already begun shipping to stores and should arrive in more than 2,900 U.S. Walmart locations by Sunday, June 21st. So yesterday.
I think it's an interesting idea. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not see if it works?
Sounds like, hey, we got these extra books lying around. Let's shrink wrap them and send them to Walmart.
Well, and we've talked about countless times that the market for single issue comics is just simply not as big as the market for comics in general is. And so I think this is I think it might not work. I don't know that it will, but it's a good way to at least see, like, maybe this gets more people that wouldn't buy a single issue to, like, they get one of those and they're like, oh, this is kind of cool. I actually want to look more into this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not an equal example, but when I was a kid, in Wyoming, I was working at a grocery store and they randomly got the first issue of Straczynski's Thor run. This was from Marvel back in the early mid 2000s. Ended up being a really good run, and it wasn't like they carried that title. We just randomly got, like, you know, four or five copies of the first issue, and I really liked it, and I was like, oh, I kind of want to find out more about this. And of course that store never got any, you know, issues 2, 3, 4 or whatever.
Of course not.
but because it was in Sundance, Wyoming. There is no comic book store close to Sundance, Wyoming. So, I would never have seen that issue otherwise. And so it got me into a series. And I think I ended up, like, getting – I think my mom helped me get it shipped to us. But, you know, like, it was – and that's how I got into that series. So I think this potentially has the potential to do something like that, where maybe a kid – picks up one of these, or the parent gets them a pack of one of these, and they're like, oh, I actually like this specific series, and maybe they get into that. I think if I would like to see single issues continue, and I think that they are at risk of becoming an endangered species. And I think if DC wants them to continue, they've got to find ways like this to see if they can hook a new audience into getting single issue comics.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I have a feeling that the 100-page giants weren't doing as good as they wanted them to. I think they did good for a while, but they must have been dying off.
Well, I think I don't know for sure, but I suspect the problem was that they probably did well at first because comic book fans went out and bought them, right?
Right.
To see what they were like. And then once that stopped, then it went to mainly just the audience that it was intended to be for. People weren't probably picking them up as much. Not to mention, like, that's a lot. Like, those 100-page giants are big. Like that, and so, I don't know. It just could have been, like, from a production standpoint, they're expensive to make relative to the profit that they were turning. I don't know. Or, it was just too much comic. Like, it's too intimidating for somebody to be like, oh, I'm going to pick up this gigantic Wonder Woman thing.
Yeah. You know what I'm surprised they haven't started doing yet? Having like instead of having single issues, having like a week's worth of comics in one book or something. Well, maybe not a whole week's worth, but you know what I mean. Putting out bigger anthology things with the comics from that week in it.
They, what's funny is they actually do that.
Oh,
when
really?
But not here. To my knowledge, not here, which is crazy. So when I was getting my master's in Scotland, that's a thing. In the UK, they send you do get the single issue comics over there, to be certain. But also they sell over there like collections of like this is the like Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman issue 5, right? And then the next one of those that comes out is issue 6 for all of them.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I think that would sell.
So it's a thing that they do make. And I don't think they make it for all of them, and I never got any of them, so I don't know all the details with it, but like I know it's a thing that exists. And I remember being surprised when I saw it and I asked, some of my British friends about it, and I was like, well, I've never seen that. At least to my knowledge, I've never seen that over here.
So, interesting, huh?
Yeah.
All right, for our next bit of DC news, Batgirl is the key to Rick Grayson becoming Dick again in Nightwing number 72 preview they've had. So I'm kind of excited about that. And I don't know if you've noticed, but I started reading the Nightwing series again.
I did notice.
You're probably like, what the heck is Drew doing?
I went to read the comics for this week, and all I saw was Nightwing, Nightwing, Nightwing. I was like, uh-oh. I was really excited. That's what I meant to say.
So it's the issues I've been reading over the last few days have been about the Court of Owls and Talon coming to Bloodhaven.
And you sound very enthused about it.
Do I?
No. The sigh that started this story.
I mean, it's okay. So, but I'm excited about Dick Grayson coming back as Nightwing. And I just wanted to get caught up on what's going on because he's going to be coming into the Joker War storyline. And I think he's going to be Dick Grayson again by that time. So I decided to get some of the issues we'd missed, catch up on it. Plus, I wanted to find out what was going on with the Court of Owls and Talon in that story. So they basically, because he's lost his memories and stuff, they're trying to reprogram his brain to become Talon. So
I have to say one thing that I think is a shame with King Tom King clearly is the one that I'm assuming because it was his story is the one that decided to do that to Dick Grayson. And I think it's a shame that if he made that decision, that he wasn't the one that then told the story with that. You know what I mean? Like, that's such a major thing. And we've seen how poorly it turned out. Like, it resulted in a year and a half of, frankly, crap comics.
Yeah.
With Nightwing.
But if you remember right, the Rick Grayson thing didn't happen in the Batman title. That happened in the Nightwing title.
But he still created the situation that caused them to need to tell a story around that. Like, you can't just have, you know, Nightwing get shot in the noggin and have no consequences from that, right?
Right.
So I will say this, and I do put some of this on the feet of Tom King, and I don't know if it was his decision, the editorial team's decision, whatever, but I do think if you're going to do something like that to a character, I think you should, if you are not the one responsible for then telling the story for that character, I think it's a little questionable whether you should do that or not in a continuity story. You know what I mean? Because
yeah.
I don't know. Because let's just say, worst case scenario, King decided to do it with no regard to what was going on in Nightwing book. And then the Nightwing writers are just there like, oh, great. Now this is the story I have to tell. Now, you know, that's as far as my sympathy would go for them, because they proceeded to tell a crap story. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think it's only fair. I level that criticism against Bendis all the time. All the time. I think it's only fair that I also point that out with King, too.
Fair enough. But anyways, I've been reading, trying to get caught up on Nightwing. So hopefully get him back to normal soon.
Yeah, I agree. It's long overdue.
Yes. All right, up next for DC News. DC pulls Warren Ellis's death metal story following a series of allegations. Here we go with this again, huh?
I agree with the decision, to be honest. And it's just, I don't know. It's really, it's disheartening to see that this popped up. Within the comic book world, was it like a year or two ago? There was a lot of stories like this that were coming out, which is good. Like, it's good that these things are finally coming out. But like, it's so frustrating. It's not surprising, but it's frustrating that there was more, right?
Right.
And it's just like, it's not surprising. It's just disheartening that there are so many separate stories that are all, you know, that all have this commonality with them. Like, it's just so rampant in the comic book industry. It's very disappointing. And I hope it's something that is in the midst of changing and is not something that is as big of a problem as clearly it's been. I mean, because it's not just Ellis, right? Like, it's been so many other comic creators. And you know, there's probably still more that have, you know, not been outed yet. And it's just, it's frustrating.
It is. All right, moving on to other DC news. Michael Keaton is in talks to return as Batman for the Flash movie. Kind of excited about that. I liked Michael Keaton as Batman in the 1989 version. I wasn't such a big fan of Batman Returns. I mean, he was okay in it, but I wasn't a big fan of the movie overall. But I loved him in the 1989 Batman movie, which I quote quite often.
It makes me really curious to know what their plan for this movie is, right? Like,
right.
Where are we going to get some sort of multiverse story? Because that would be pretty cool.
That would be cool.
It would fit the Flash, like, as we've seen on the TV show.
Yeah. And I'm curious, is he going to be, I'm guessing he's going to be playing Thomas Wayne Batman, maybe? But he could be playing the older Batman, 1989 Batman too. It depends on what they're going to do, because it's supposed to be a Flashpoint story, and I don't exactly know how they're going to do that on the big screen. But
is it still supposed to be Flashpoint? That's the other thing. I saw this news and I was like, I was excited because it seems like a really cool idea, and if it were to happen, I think it would be awesome to have him back. But I also, like, that movie has been a freaking disaster. it's had like six different directors attached to it. Do we know for sure that that's what the story is going to be?
I don't know for sure.
Like, that's... it was the story at one point, right?
Right.
Four directors ago or so.
I don't know what it's supposed to be. I'm was assuming it still was.
No. And I'm not, that's my point, right? I'm not trying to criticize our knowledge. That movie has been such a disaster in terms of pre-production. Like, I still don't totally believe it's going to be made, if I'm being honest with you.
They're going to have to literally be filming the movie before I accept that that movie is being made at this point. And that's not even it's not even an exaggeration. Five or six different directors. I know they've rewritten the movie at least once, if not twice. That's what happens when you have five different people attached to do the project. I don't know, man.
I don't know. I'm excited about the Michael Keaton thing. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. And I know it's frustrating when they've had all these problems. So I'm hoping this movie's moving forward, but we'll see.
My hope is even if this particular movie doesn't end up happening, that it's at least opened the door to doing something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That maybe this doesn't work out, and maybe it will, and I hope it does, but then they go like, well, okay, so this didn't work out because it was a mess. But now we have this idea of bringing Michael Keaton back and doing maybe – I'm assuming it would have to be some sort of, you know, multiverse thing, and that would be awesome. That would be really cool.
That would be. All right, and for our last bit of DC news, Netflix has revealed that Lucifer Season 5 will premiere August 21st.
I'm excited. I will definitely be watching it when it comes out for sure.
And I got to get – I almost started watching Lucifer the other day. I was like, I should start watching something new. And I didn't. But I'll get around to it one of these days, though.
Like I said, I recommend it as a really fun show. It is not going to blow your mind, you know, it's some like amazingly crafted show or anything like that. It's just really fun. And Tom Ellis, who plays Lucifer, is just so, so good in that role. He's just so captivating. And I enjoy the rest of the cast. Like they've got, for example, the guy who played Brother Blood on Arrow is a detective on the show. He's great. I enjoy it. It's a fun show. It is not, like I said, it's not an award-winning show, but it's really fun and entertaining. And that's all I want sometimes.
I'll check it out sometime in the near future. All right. Well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Hey, weird podcast people. Join us every week on the Flopcast for a half hour or so of silly conversation about comics, music, Saturday morning cartoons, old movies and TV shows, and chickens. It'll be our little secret. Find us at flopcast.net and on the ESO Network.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Dark Knight's Death Metal number 1. Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo throw us into a world of chaos in this issue, as it seems the DC Universe has been taken over by the Batman Who Laughs. The issue starts off with Sergeant Rock telling us how bad things are and grossing us out with turd sandwiches. Honestly, I could have done without the first page, but it was kind of funny. Next, we find Wonder Woman disposing of the invisible jet. She's the ruler of Hell, which we are also told is formerly Themyscira. Here, all the villains of the DC Universe are being held captive, and we kind of get a glimpse of some of them. We see Riddler, Captain Cold, Joker. Now, Wonder Woman is still good in this story, and we see that she is under the rulership of the Batman Who Laughs. Swamp Thing, who seems to be burnt to a crisp and kind of still on fire smoldering, seems to be Wonder Woman's closest companion, and they are conspiring to fix the universe. We see three evil Batmans come, bringing Diana a prisoner that they want tossed into Tartarus. And then they tell Wonder Woman that she's being summoned to come speak to the Batman Who Laughs. Now, we find out that the Batman Who Laughs has his own Justice League. We have Harley Quinn, Hunter of the Wastelands, Dr. Arkham, Aquaman, Commander of the Black Fleet, Baphomet, Diana, Queen of the Underworld. We have Batmage, Mr. Miracle, Guardian of New Apocalypse, and Darkfather. Now, the Batman Who Laughs has brought his Justice League together to tell them that Perpetua has destroyed Earth 22, and out of the 52 Earths, only 8 remain. Batman shows up wielding the black ring from Blackest Night, and he rises an army of the undead to fight against the Batman Who Laughs. Next, we go to a planet made of living bone, where a Bastich, who calls himself the Main Man, has dug up some key and says that everything is ready to light up the joint. So Lobo's back. At the end of the issue, Diana goes into Tartarus and finds Wally West. Wally West explains how all power in our reality gathers around two poles. Every positive energy in the universe, like the speed force, the emotional spectrum, the forces of the justice, they're all connected. And they link to each other, to our past, reminding us we are part of one epic generation story. Now the other pole, the opposing power, rages. We have the crisis energy, the anti-life, chaos magic, the forces of doom, all that power disrupts and takes instead of gives. The crisis energy looks to shatter connections and make only one moment important. We find out that Perpetua chose the Batman Who Laughs over Lex Luthor because he promised Perpetua if she chose him, he would provide a conduit to the dark multiverse, where the greatest crises are forever happening as long as we remember them. The reason some of the good guys are still alive. Now we see Wonder Woman kill the Batman Who Laughs with the invisible chainsaw of truth. I know, that got some laughs out of me too. And then after his death, one of the Batmans runs back to their hideout and presses an unhappy Watchman button and releases a new Bruce Wayne that looks an awful lot like Dr. Manhattan. The issue ends with the real Batman grabbing Sergeant Rock and telling him the fight is happening now. I don't know if I did a good job of summing up this issue, but it probably was read a lot better than I did.
No, I mean, recap. That much really does happen. There is a ton going on, and there is an unbelievable amount of dialogue in this.
I
don't remember the Batman Who Laughs. Like, I think his text box are always like that, right? With the black and red.
Yes.
But I found this really hard to read this time. I don't know if you had that problem. It was a harder time reading it than I normally do.
Okay. In the past series, I had trouble reading that text. I didn't like reading that text. This time when I read it, I didn't have any problems. So I had the opposite problem. And the thing, I really enjoyed this issue because when I was the first series, I had problems understanding what was going on. This was written more clearly, I thought. And I really enjoyed it. There was packed with a lot of stuff, I'll give you that, but I understood it a lot better, and I enjoyed it a lot better than I did the first series.
Part of me wonders if this is going to be coherent, and maybe the end is going to be coherent, but we're going to have a lot of craziness in the middle that's a lot like what Metal was, which was a lot of really awesome scenes that didn't necessarily tell a coherent story.
I agree
with you. I thought this issue was very concise, but I almost felt like it was concise because it had to be, because it's setting the stage for what the story is going to be. And then it kind of felt like it was like about to, you know, pull the cork out of the bottle.
I'll tell you, if I start not understanding it, I'm not going to like it as much. But I did really enjoy this issue a lot. And I hope it's understandable.
Yeah. I will say, this very much strengthened my opinion on what I thought the takeaway from the end of his Justice League run was. Remember we talked about it felt like it was a really strong rebuke of reboots.
Right.
If that wasn't clear from the end of his Justice League run, I mean, he could not have stated any more explicitly in this. The villains literally are rebooting continuity. Like,
yeah. Like,
the good guys just want to tell one big long story. The bad guys, Dan Didio, keep rebooting the stories over and over and over. I think it's a really interesting thesis, and I don't necessarily disagree with them. I think it's interesting because those moments when Wally West is telling that over the two-page spread, those are all the big moments we think of in DC history, right?
Right.
But at the same time, I think Snyder's kind of got a point that by doing that, you're telling me that everything that happened in between all of those didn't matter. And to a certain extent, that's been, like, I would say arguably that's been true to a certain extent, right?
Right.
Like, a lot of the stuff, like, you and I may have personally enjoyed different series that we personally liked, but that only matters to us personally. As far as DC is concerned, those stories don't count. Like, for example, I really enjoyed the New 52 Flash run with the original team. That none of that matters now. Like, nothing that from that run, I think, has any impact on anything anymore. You know what I mean? And so I like what Snyder was saying at one point. He was clearly talking essentially about the, like, DC editorial team and how they were hoping by locking Perpetua away and just allowing the stories to grow on their own that they would see the merit of it, but they didn't. They just raged. And I kind of agree with that. Like, just let – I think there's something to that. I think by constantly – rebooting the story, yes, you are fixing continuity errors and plot holes that inevitably get introduced by the nature of comics and new writers taking up stories. But at the same time, like, we end up just retreading ground. Like, I feel like I keep reading, and a lot of times I feel like I keep reading or watching the same stories. Like, it feels like every time we do, as you know, a certain hero, like, if we do a Batman story, it's got to lead up to him meeting the Joker for the first time, or, you know what I mean? Or, like,
yeah.
And all of these stories that we watch, like, because it's one thing in a show because the show is introducing it potentially for the first time, but when you're also getting that in comics, that was one thing that frustrated me occasionally with the New 52, is you were reading stories that were good. They weren't necessarily bad comics, but they were, like, the main point of the story was to basically retell a story you already knew. And so you effectively knew how the story was going. And I guess there was some excitement being like, ooh, they're doing this story. But at the same time, like, they shouldn't have to do that, right?
Just
let them tell a new story. Do something where, like, they don't have to reintroduce the existence of Zoom, or they don't have to reintroduce the existence of Merlin. Like, they're there already, and we can just do those stories.
Yeah, old school comics.
Well, and it's interesting to me because I wonder if this was meant to be. Was this meant to be the thing that led into Generations?
I don't know.
Correct me if I'm wrong here. Snyder was reportedly the one that was, like, hardcore against Generations happening, right?
See, I don't remember.
I think he was. So the rumor was that one of the reasons Didio finally got pushed out was because Snyder was basically leading a charge against it. Like, this isn't the direction that DC Comics should go. And he, I'm assuming, probably had some sway because a lot of his comics are the biggest selling comics DC does.
Right. Yeah, that's very possible. I did hear that there was rumblings between the two. So, and I, for one, from what I heard from the Generations, I wasn't really interested in those stories. And that may just be because I like the old school characters. I have no problems, too, if they want to write stories with different versions of Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. But I still want to have the originals.
And I would agree with that. And what they need to do, I think the problem with what Generations was, what I believe it was supposed to be,
was that it was like the New 52, where it's introducing things that are potentially interesting, but it's forcing it on all of the comics, right?
Right.
Like you said, I would be interested in seeing a story with different versions of Wonder Woman, Batman, stuff like that. We've seen that. But don't force that to be the status quo, right?
Right.
Like, tell those stories by all means. Have it be its own series. Do like Marvel had the Ultimate line. It doesn't even need to be, you know, like they all need to be tied together in their own continuity. Just tell the story. Just have it come out. Just have it be a comic, and it's there. You want to read that story where, you know, Wonder Woman is first introduced to the world in 2020? Great.
And there you know it is. What? You know what? That's the whole purpose of the multiverse in the first place. You can have these different worlds with these different versions. That was the whole point of it.
I agree. And I think there's, to a certain extent, and I feel, I could be wrong, I feel like Snyder was arguing this too, where it's like it doesn't, like, why, we don't have to define everything by these certain moments, right?
Right.
That, like, yeah, sure, you can tell that story, and sure, maybe technically it exists in a different multiverse, but it doesn't really matter. Ultimately, it's about the story. Like, Far Sector, for example, I frankly don't care if Far Sector is meant to be taking place in continuity or not. It's just a good story. It's telling a really interesting Green Lantern story with a character that did not exist before this. And it's awesome. Because it doesn't, like, it's just telling its own story. And nobody's worrying about, you know, this is the new Green Lantern, or this is happening in between issues 4 and 5 of Grant Morrison's run. You know what I mean? Like, it's just telling a story. And I think that's the big thing that Snyder is arguing. It's just like, stop rebooting everything and just tell a story. And just let these stories unfold.
Agreed. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Strange Adventures number 2. Cletus, one thing I learned from this issue is that Michael Holt could go on Jeopardy and win a whole lot of money. We see Michael spend a lot of his time in this issue answering questions from his T-spheres as he went about his day. We saw him purchase Adam Strange's book, we saw him read through it, and we saw him talking to Batman several different times. And we see that ultimately Mr. Terrific decides to take the case. Michael tells Batman that Adam Strange's daughter is not dead. And he doubts that is not the only lie. And Michael goes and meets with Adam Strange in Atlanta at the end of the issue. Now in the flashbacks, we find out that Pykes have conquered the great cities with a massacre unlike any before. A sea of bodies wash over the land. Those who escaped have come to the desert. Now, Adam Strange and Atlanta have taken on the mission to reach out to the Hello Tate, a vicious race of savages that live in the desert, and they decide to enlist their aid to build an army. Now, we see Atlanta's jetpack break down in the middle of the desert, and Adam Strange has to go on without her. And we see Adam Strange's jetpack eventually breaks down also. We see he must drink the blood of some animal to survive. And when Adam finally makes it to the Hello Tate, they are not welcome to see him. And we see that's basically the end of the issue.
Man, I missed this series. I was so excited when we got it back finally.
I know. I remember you asking me a few weeks ago if I knew when it was coming back. So I knew it was coming back soon. So I was happy we got it this week too. So what'd you think?
This issue was so good, man. Like, I thought he got Mr. Terrific really well. Like, I felt like he understood that character. I thought one of the things I thought was super interesting was, and I thought it was pretty accurate, was when Mr. Terrific is talking to Batman and he's talking about his hesitancy to agree to investigate him. And he was saying, like, people won't appreciate somebody like me looking into somebody like him. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yep. That's very true.
But very true. And I don't know, man. I
I continue to really like the dueling art style. I think works so well with this. I thought it was such a great – I talked about it when we reviewed issue one, but like it's such a great idea because you're getting this adventure story drawn in one style and you're getting like effectively what is the real world, so to speak, or what, you know, like a more like down-to-earth story in a different, you know, more down-to-earth art style. It complements the comic so well. Obviously, I'm a big fan of King's writing, but the artwork I think is equally important to why this series works so well, at least so far. It's an incredible idea for the artwork like this. I'm not saying it's the first one it's not the first comic that's done something like this, but like it's a good idea and it's executed so well. It really amplifies the story.
I agree with you. One thing I thought was interesting was Michael mentioned that Batman was manipulative.
Yeah.
I found that funny because he knew Michael was going to take the case. So,
yeah. I am so curious to see where this story goes. He's like, it feels so ominous. You know, it's probably going to get really dark. And like, it's like part of me is like, oh man, I can't wait to see that.
I know. I think one of the reasons why we're excited about this story is it's different. Yes. You know, we're not telling the same story over again. This is something new and it's kind of exciting to get something new.
Absolutely. And it's not burdened by any other story, right? Like, obviously it's playing off of your idea of who Adam Strange is. It's playing off of your idea of Mr. Terrific, but like there's no obligation for Tom King to be like, this happens in between the Terrifics number 19 and 20. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's just a character it's just a story that features these characters. To DC's credit, I think they are starting to do more of these. We've seen other ones like this. And I don't think that King is the only person that can do them. Obviously, I really like what we got with Mr. Miracle, and I'm really enjoying this Strange Adventures so far. But like, I would love to see DC continue to do more of these.
Yeah.
Not that like I think there is still absolutely a place for continuity issue by issue superhero comics for sure, but I also think that continuing to do these and to really invest in doing these kinds of stories is, I think, a way to, frankly, secure the future for DC. Like, I think these are the kind of stories that are going to keep an audience around, because I think at a certain point, especially like if, as Snyder argues, you just end up recycling the ongoing stories over and over and you just keep reading like yet another generic Batman Penguin story, like people get tired of that, right? And they'll stop reading it. And so these stories like this, like you said, it's fresh, it's something new, it's something I've never read a story with Adam Strange like this. So yeah, I really liked this issue. I cannot wait to read the rest of the series. It's one of those things where it makes me frustrated that it's not already out in a trade, because I just want to sit down and read the whole story.
All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week, Superman number 22. So the issue opens up with Superman battling Mongol. Mongol has brought Warworld to Earth, and Superman is able to redirect its course and blow it up. Then Superman proceeds to battle Mongol on Venus. And once defeated, Superman ties Mongol to what's left of Warworld and takes him back to his home planet in disgrace. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you about, because I was confused about this, I thought Mongol had killed his race. He was the only one that was left on the planet that he ruled. Is that not a thing anymore?
No, so this story, there was a footnote. I understand if you missed it. There was a footnote. This story, somewhat inexplicably, happens before that Mongol issue that we read.
Oh.
And it's yet another example within this entire Bendis story run of all these different comics he's doing, where these comics are coming out wildly out of place. I understand that this issue probably was meant to come out several months ago, but the Mongol issue still would have come out before, regardless of the delays with these comics. The Mongol issue still would have come out beforehand. Why? Why would, like, that makes this story not make sense. If you are reading these as they come out. And I don't know. I don't feel like Bendis is writing these comics as if they're meant to be read in a trade, to be frank with you. Because they just, like, I would be hard-pressed to say if you collected the first, whatever, 20 issues of this, that there would be a coherent arc that we've read so far, right?
Right.
So I would argue he is writing these issue by issue, or not, you know, like he is writing these to be read issue by issue, and yet so many of these stories are coming out of order. Like, that just doesn't work. That's, like, I agree with you. I was confused. I think I specifically said the last time we reviewed this, or at least one of the, within the last two issues when Mongol first popped up, that I was pretty sure this was the new Mongol. I know I said that at some point, and I was clearly wrong. Because, but why would I know that? Why wouldn't I think that? The Mongol issue came out first. That's a safe assumption, I feel like, that this would be the new Mongol.
Right. So, yeah, a little confusing. All right, well, Lois Lane gets a visit from FBI agent Cameron Chase, and she's here to tell Lois and Clark no more mistakes. When the United Nations heard about the United Planets, they called an emergency special Secret World Security Council vote, and they gave Superman sanctioned intergalactic representational authority retroactively. And I'm not sure what the FBI think they are going to do with Superman if he makes another mistake, because I don't think trying to arrest him will do anything unless he just gives himself up. But something tells me that Bendis has planted this little seed because he wants to see Superman get arrested and go on trial for something in the near future. That's what feels like what's going on to me.
Yeah, probably. I just, what was the point of that story? Was kind of my reaction to that. Where it was like Bendis wanted you to think it was going to be one thing, and then he pulled the old switcheroo, and it's actually like, no, actually, we do appreciate Superman, and logically, he is the one that should do this, as everybody already knew. And it was like, why tell that story?
Yeah, that's a good question.
And because it is setting something up, but also, like, nothing in that outcome of that is something that isn't sort of implicitly known by the audience reading the story, right?
Like, right.
Of course, if Superman screws up royally, there's going to be ramifications, right? Like, I don't need to be told that.
Exactly. We know that.
You know what I mean? Like, I get it. I'm not saying that they're wrong. Like, I understand the point that, yes, he is so important that if he screws it up, there's going to be scrutiny. But, like, wouldn't you know that? Like, I feel like both of us already knew that.
We did know that.
I don't know that I needed to read that. That's a whole half of a comic that could have been something else. They could have done more with the Superman. That was the other thing I thought was odd, was that they left a lot of Superman hints that there's something else going on with Mongol. And he's just like, and I just don't care. And it felt like Bendis put that in there because he was trying to excuse why we weren't getting, like, there wasn't enough room in the comic to go into depth with that. And so Bendis is just like, yeah, so I don't care. Because I didn't really feel like that didn't feel like Superman to be like, oh man, there's something going on with him. I wonder what it is. I don't care. I'm just going to punch him. Like, that's not Superman.
No, it's not.
Right? But it makes sense if you only have 12 pages to tell the Superman Mongol story and you've already used 11 of them. Then of course, that line makes sense because you've got to explain why you're not going to get into it in the 12th issue. And it also, again, going back to the frustrating thing with this overall, you know, multi-comic thing that he's doing, is it makes it necessary to read that Mongol issue to understand what he's getting at with that, because clearly we see some inner conflict with him, right?
Yep.
Why wouldn't you get in? Like, that's interesting. That's, like, to Bendis's credit, that's an interesting thing. Why wouldn't you get into it there?
Good question. Okay, now let's get into the other thing I thought felt weird. We were having a United Planets meeting on Daxam. The people that are very prejudiced against alien races, that's where they're having their United Planets meeting. And why was the Justice League there all of a sudden? I don't know. It just felt weird to me.
I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I have a good answer for that. It just sort of felt like I need to wrap this story up, and I'm not going to really worry too much about the logic of it.
So, and then we found out Lois finished her book. And I thought it was funny that Clark was teasing her about reading it in 27 seconds. So I did find that funny.
I continue to be a little bit, like, a lot of it frustrated with this series because, like, it feels like we're stuck in second gear, right? Like,
yeah,
it just feels like we're never getting the story going. It feels like we're constantly setting something up and setting something up. And what is it, Drew? Like, what is the story that we're reading? Because it doesn't feel like we're reading, like, the ongoing adventures of Superman.
No.
And I think it's meant to be that, but it never feels like that. It always feels like it's a setup for something, and then that something just never comes.
Right. And this is supposed to be the end of the story arc. So, all right. Well, let's move on to our next title for this week, The Green Lantern Season 2, Number 4. All right. First thing I'm going to say is I'm not going to pretend that I understood this story. But I can give you some interesting details. We have Hal and Barry meet at a museum. They get transported to an alien world that looks like Earth when Pangaea was a continent. And Olivia Reynolds gets transported with them, but I don't know how, or she just kind of pops up there. We see the aliens try to rip Flash's molecules apart. Hal plays pool with a bunch of planets as his pool balls.
That was really cool. I just want to say. That was one of the cooler Green Lantern things I've seen in a while. That was kind of awesome.
Olivia is the U-Mine, which I believe is from Season 1. She's the one that scares the aliens away. But then we have Hal takes Olivia's memory away again because she's too dangerous. Barry's late to his date with Iris. And Hal gets a warning from the Guardians about a dangerous criminal on the loose. And then some woman in a cape shows up, tries to kill Hal. That's about what I understood from this issue.
So that woman is there because she's kidnapped. Like, she's pulled through that portal, and they go after her. So, like, that's the whole, like, sort of purpose, reason for the story existing.
Okay. Okay. It was hard to understand.
Yeah. Yeah, it was weird because it was, like, some sort of... I won't pretend like I fully understood it either, but it seemed like it was almost some sort of the remnants of a failed society. Like, the society itself had somehow crumbled, but some certain parts of it were left, and that was why it wasn't really a functional... Like, there was something had tried to create life for, like, some sort of civilization there. And whatever it was left or fell apart or whatever, but there was enough left that you had this sort of mess of a civilization left over. That was what I kind of gathered.
I know it was fun to see Hal and Barry team up. And even though I didn't quite understand the whole story, I still enjoyed the comic. And that's a lot of Morrison's issues are for me. I don't understand them. I get fun moments out of them, and that's about it.
Yep, I would agree completely with that. I'm not going to pretend like I fully understood it either, but I enjoyed it. I felt like I understood enough to, like, you know, to enjoy what I was reading. And I really, like, that pool thing was really cool.
It was, wasn't it?
I would love to, like, I feel like we don't get enough of that sort of creativity with it. It's so frustrating. And I love, like, leading up to that scene where the ring is, like, it's only limited by your will and, in a sense, your imagination. And that's one of the thing that's always most appealed to me about Green Lantern as a character, that it's, in a sense, an unlimited character, right? Like, yep. I'm not saying he's more powerful than Superman, but, like, he can do so many different things, basically entirely dependent on, like, his imagination and his force of will to execute that. And I feel like so many creators don't fully tap into that idea. It just ends up being a lot of laser beams and bubbles.
Yep, and hammers.
Yeah. Not that I enjoy the classic fist as much as the next guy. Like, that's great, but I don't know. A scene like that reminds me why I like that character so much.
Understand. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Wonder Woman number 757. So the issue opens up centuries ago. Gudra is the last Valkyrie standing, and Queen Hippolyta shows her mercy to go home and bury her dead. When the Valkyrie leaves, a mysterious person shows up on her boat, talking about a curse, and he will revisit when the time is ripe. Now, in the present, Queen Hippolyta is fighting Paula Van Gunther, Gudra's descendant. Now, Maggie and the other Amazons are fighting a golem that is named Genocide, a clay figure brought to life by magic. I had to look that up because I wasn't sure what a golem was.
Is she connected to metal somehow? Because it looks exactly like the Batman Who Laughs.
It does, doesn't it? Coincidence, huh?
Is it coincidence? That's why I don't know.
I don't know because
it comes from that.
It didn't say. The issue didn't say, so I don't know. And I have a feeling we're not going to find out. But
no, yeah.
So Wonder Woman and Donna Troy show up using their lassos on the golem. And Wonder Woman figures out that War Master is controlling Genocide. The Amazons bring out the sword Godkiller, but Wonder Woman is able to convince Paula that they will seek the truth about the Amazons and the Valkyries. And just as they're about to use the lasso, Phantom Stranger shows up and turns Paula to stone. He transports both Paula and Diana to the gates of heaven, where Wonder Woman intends to fight on behalf of her enemy. So, we were accurate last time when we said it looked like just Paula and that other, the golem, were the only two going to attack the Amazons. And they made the golem seem like she was really powerful.
It felt like it was the destroyer suit from Thor sort of thing, where it was like, is this really that hard for everybody to take down?
But they took her down, so it wasn't that
only,
hard.
But only once they, like, distracted Paula enough.
Yeah.
The implication was that if that didn't happen, that literally the entirety of Paradise Island was not able to take that one thing down, which is incredible. I don't know that that's inaccurate. I don't know. Like, it was just, I was like, wow, I didn't realize this was that big of a threat, to be honest with you.
And this is supposed to be the four horsewomen. The other ones didn't really play a factor into it at all.
Yeah, I can't say I'm that surprised by that, though. It never really felt like they mattered that much, if I'm being honest.
I agree with you. It didn't, did it?
This story got weird, man, right at the end.
Yes.
Like, wait, what? This is ultimately about the Phantom Stranger? What? I'm not disinterested. I have to admit, like, I'm interested to see where the story goes. I'm frankly more interested in than what I thought we were going to get, which was Wonder Woman basically just talking Paula down and they learn the real truth. Because that would have been sort of like, well, we knew that she was in the wrong the whole time. You know what I mean?
Right.
I had been frustrated because it felt like an inevitable story, if that makes sense. Like, we were just essentially wasting our time to get to the end that everybody knew was coming. So, on that regard, I'm thrilled to be proven wrong, because I sure as hell didn't think we were going to go to heaven with the Phantom Stranger.
I think it's going to be there. Interesting. I'm curious who Wonder Woman's going to be meeting up there in heaven. Because I don't think it's going to be Zeus.
No.
So, I'm intrigued by this also, to see what's going to happen. I'm sure Paula's going to be, Wonder Woman's going to talk whoever the being is up there in charge, letting Paula back under her care, where Paula's going to be a character that hangs around her to be redeemed. That's what I'm guessing. And we've gotten far away from that Boston policewoman, which I have no problem with.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So hopefully,
again, another character that, like, what was the purpose?
Yeah.
It seemed like, again, like with Superman, it felt like we were constantly leading up to some point, but we're never getting around to what that point was.
Yep. And who knows? She'll probably pop back up later, but
probably.
We'll deal with that when we get there. All right. Well, let's move on to our last title for this week, Young Justice number 15. So Superboy is able to stop Dr. Glory. Young Justice shows up and tells Dr. Glory that they have contacted the authorities. With Dr. Glory unconscious, Bart explains that something happened to the multiverse, a crisis, and Superboy found out about illegal experiments that Star Labs was conducting. He confronted them, and then Dr. Glory sent him to Gem World. The crisis happened, and Superboy was lost in reality. And we find out that the conclusion is Superboy is the clone of Superman and Lex Luthor and is not from this reality. The FBI shows up and arrests Dr. Glory. Bart gives Naomi the address to her homeworld, which I'm guessing that's going to continue on in season 2 of Naomi. Just feels like a little prediction there. And it's decided that everyone there is going to be the new Young Justice, and that Zan is going to talk to Superman into making them a sanctioned youth organization known as the Young Justice League. Bendis' way of making it official without having to write all the stuff to make it official.
I can't believe he wrote an entire issue on what should frankly have been the last 5 pages of an issue.
He did, didn't he?
This whole run has been unbelievable, Drew. Like, it's a masterclass on how to turn an absolute, like, 1 to 2 issue at best length story into a, like, how many issues are we in now?
This is issue number 15.
15? 15? You cannot possibly tell me we have read 15 issues worth of story.
Nope.
I am in awe that he has managed to stretch this all out into 15 issues. That's ridiculous.
And most of it's just been them standing around.
That's my point. Like, that's how you do it. That's how you do it. That's how you turn a story in which was essentially just them confronting a gal at Star Labs into this long of a story is just a lot of people standing around. And when you take up 5 pages every issue to introduce every character, it really does a lot of the work for you because you're only writing 15 pages after that.
That's very true.
It's unbelievable. Like, what was the point of all of these characters being in this story? None of them did anything.
They're the Young Justice League now.
Great. But are they, see, like, I, again, all that's great, that this, that should have been, like, the status quo that's established at the end of this, which I like, should have been the end of issue 4 max, right?
Yes.
Because then, ideally, I'm not going to claim to be a professional writer, but ideally, you could then just tell whatever story with any group of those, like, basically like Justice League Unlimited used to be, right?
Yeah.
They technically had access to any DC character, and just any week, any episode was just about one of those random, you know, a random pairing or whatever. That's what this comic could easily be. And so you establish that status quo early, and then you just tell that, where, like, this time it's Aqualad and Naomi, right?
Right.
And then next time it's Speedy and Bart Allen. Like, sure, great, okay.
And the thing you could do with that, you could focus on the different characters, and then you can always have them come together for some big event, or, you know, take on some big bad guy together every once in a while. You know, that's how this could go.
And the other thing, and this is the other thing, and again, I know that it's a common theme that we keep harping on in this podcast, but, like, again, with what Snyder is going after, the whole point of effectively this entire Connor Kent arc was to, like, tell us who Connor Kent was, which we already knew. We
yes.
already knew that. Even for people who haven't, like, I would argue, even for the target audience of this, I know that we are not the target audience. But as someone who runs a comic book club for middle school kids who would be the target audience for this, they also know who Connor Kent is, because a lot of them watch the Young Justice show. So, like, that's it's rehashing information unnecessarily for an audience that also knows it.
Yes. I've been reading Connor Kent Superboy since the early 90s. I know who the character is.
Oh, and then, so the other thing I wanted to talk about with this, I don't know if you caught it. I can't remember who tells her to go check it out, but somebody tells the Hex girl to go talk to Dr. Fate.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
I think Bart does, right? I think Bart tells her.
I think so.
That's the second time we forgot. So when we were talking about Legion last week, the cover teased that Dr. Fate was supposed to be in that, but to our knowledge, never actually appeared in the issue. this is now the second time that Bendis has referenced doing something with Dr. Fate. And I don't know about you, I feel a little bit concerned that he's going to be trying to introduce something with him that's going to ignore what they're doing in Justice League Dark with Dr. Fate.
Oh, that wouldn't surprise me.
And normally I wouldn't care. I know I just argued that it doesn't matter, just tell your own story. But the reason I am worried about that is because Bendis frequently doesn't work that way, that whatever story change he introduces is forced onto everyone. And so we just got Khalid back as Dr. Fate, which was introduced in New 52. So I'm not pretending like this is like some long overdue status quo. But like that's a really cool development. And I don't know what Bendis is planning on doing with the character. And is he going to force something into where then Justice League Dark is going to be forced to tell to change their what they're doing with that character?
I hope not, because their story is really good.
It is really good. And not that Dr. Fate is the main character in that, but like both of them are certainly important.
Yep. All right. We get to the end of this issue and we see Connor stops Bart privately and asks him to fill in the holes of his story. Like, what happened to Bart? Where's he been? What has he seen? And why is it so important to get the Young Justice back together? So Bendis is hinting at something else that's going on, and it may tie to Dr. Fate.
It felt like that, again, that felt like a tease towards, I assume, whatever the Generation story was supposed to be, right? Like, that felt like a crisis, a warning about a crisis, right? To me?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it could have been. But it seemed like they were talking about a crisis that had already happened.
Well, yes. You're right. He was referencing something. He had witnessed the other, just like what Wally had, he had witnessed these other crises. But it felt like he was saying something else was also coming that he was worried about. And I'm wondering, I don't know. It didn't feel, I couldn't tell whether it was, this is a Young Justice only problem story that I'm about to tell with that, or if this was, I'm setting up what is meant to be a tie-in to a larger story that DC was at least at one point going to tell.
Yeah. We may never know.
And we might not know. Maybe it was supposed to be tied into something else. And now Bendis will just tell his own thing, or maybe that was what it was supposed to be the whole time. I don't know.
All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk Stargirl.
Hey, everyone. This is Carrie the Metal Geek, and I would like to invite you to hang out with myself and my fellow Metal Geeks as we have all kinds of discussions about heavy metal, films and TV shows, video games, theme parks, comic books, and whatever else is tickling our geeks. Please visit our website at MetalGeeksPodcast.com and follow us on all the social medias, including Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Metal Geeks. We are also proud members of ESO Network, so you can check everything out at ESOnetwork.com. Keep it metal, keep it geeky, stay safe, and see you on the next episode.
We're back. Let's talk Stargirl, Season 1, Episode 4, Wildcat. I think this was the best episode so far. Courtney finally has a friend, plus this episode tackles an important issue that a lot of teenagers face in today's world, and something that wasn't an issue when I was a teen, and that's sexting. Now, what exactly is sexting for older people who aren't sure? It is sending sexually explicit messages, photos, or videos to your cell phone, computer, or any digital device. And as we see in this episode, it can cause a lot of harm to a person mentally when those images are shared. And before we get into this episode, I was kind of curious if you've heard of any incidents or had to deal with any incidents of sexting at your school, Cletus.
I have not personally had to deal with them, but it certainly has been something that has happened at the school. And I have to say one thing, I thought it was great that it was something that the show dealt with. It showed the ramification for Yolanda's character. The one thing that, like, I'm not going to sit here and say that every school is going to handle it well or perfectly, but I feel fairly confident that most schools would handle it better than that school did, which was to effectively do nothing. Like that, on that scale, right? And to a certain extent, schools in are kind of, their hands are tied by laws and, frankly, the finding out who actually did it and proof of that. These are the big thing, being able to prove that. But, like, I felt like the show implied that the school effectively did nothing about that, which, again, I'm not going to sit here and say that every school would for sure handle it well, but most schools, I know for certain in the school that I worked at, especially on something that scale, that implied that damn near the whole school saw those. Like,
yeah,
something's going to happen from that. You're not just going to, like, maybe they don't catch the girl that sent that, that is actually responsible for it, but, like, the guy would definitely get trouble for that, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. It bothered me a little bit in that it felt, I thought the show did a good job where it showed that, like, that girl's life suffered, but it wasn't her ultimate, like, she shouldn't have sent those pictures, but ultimately, like, she is, I thought the show did a good job saying that she is still the victim, right? Like, it wasn't right. Blaming her. And I think that's fair. I just would have liked, I don't know, something that shows that at least an attempt at ramifications or an attempt at finding out what happened.
Hey, that's what happens when you have a bunch of villains running your school.
Right. Well, yeah, but I mean, come on, man. Like,
yes, I know what you're saying, Cletus, because there would be serious ramifications at the boys' school if something like that happened. I can tell you that.
I was going to say, imagine any school in this area. If let's say not everybody, but like it had to have been up more than half of the school saw those photos. If something happened at one of those schools here, like that would be over the news. That would be invested. Like I guess yeah. Villains run the town, but like come on.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It would definitely have law enforcement involved and stuff. You're right.
That was my only, and I know it wasn't the point of the story, but it, I don't know. I personally would have liked something there. And another reason I would have liked that is to, I guess, I worry that, it's not the point, but I worry that sometimes there can be a lesson there. Like I could get away with this. Like if I do that, I can cause somebody harm like that. Right.
Right.
And nothing bad happens to me. I don't know. I don't know that that would actually happen or not, but you know what I mean? Like, I would personally like to have the show ramifications for the person that does that. Again, as a sort of morality tale, right? Because that's ultimately what it is. It's a morality tale. Like, this thing is bad. Then show that. Like, show the downside of that. Like, if you're responsible for what is sexual assault, frankly, like, then show the person suffer those consequences. In my opinion, there should have been something.
Yeah, I agree. They should have showed that on the show too. All right. Well, let's get into the episode here. This episode opens up with a flashback to 3 months ago where we discover that Yolanda of the Losers Table used to be popular at Blue Valley High School. She was dating Henry King Jr., Brainwave's son, and was running for student body president. Now, one night, Henry texts Yolanda and asks her to send a sexy pic. She refuses at first, but he begs her, and he tells her that he loves her, and it's just for him. So, she sends a topless photo. The next day, as she's giving her Election Day speech in front of the whole student body, the picture is texted throughout the school. And, of course, she's mortified and runs off stage.
Anyway, it's important to note that it is not Brainwave's son that sends that to everybody.
Right. It's that mean girl. I can't even think of her name is.
Yeah. The one thing I was confused, I didn't think this show I didn't see where she obtained the photo. She grabs it. So the mean girl, as we're calling her accurately.
Yes.
Grabs his phone before that, but like, I didn't personally feel like there was a moment where she could have obtained, like, how did she obtain that photo? Because like she grabs his phone and turns away and he very quickly grabs it back from her. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, the show didn't explain it very well. they kind of implied that he might have been working with her or for her, or that he'd started dating her in the first place for that girl. I don't know. It wasn't very clear. It was just kind of hinted at, and it wasn't explained very well at all.
I initially thought I was going to be annoyed by this plot line because I thought that it was loose in terms of like showing how it happened, if that makes sense. Like you show, it was almost like a parody almost, like this unbelievably popular girl sends a photo and then everybody gets it and it all comes crashing down. Right. And I thought, I was like, oh no, are we going to do that kind of story where like it is dealing with a very serious and real issue that absolutely happens, but it's not going to do it in a way that like is actually applicable to real life. But then everything after that, like in the main meat of the story, I thought was really good and really accurate, like showing somebody trying to recover from that. And like that would be unbelievably hard for that student to be at that school every day.
Yeah. And you know what? It makes sense why she was off at the loser table by herself. She didn't really want, every time Courtney tried to talk to her in the last few episodes, she's been pushing her away or not wanting to talk or anything. It makes total sense.
I agree. I will say though, the one thing that I still the scene we got where the mom reassures Courtney that she'll make friends at school. I'm like, she would have already made friends at school. I can't let that go, Drew. That is like, I really am not buying into the Courtney as a high school loser plotline.
I agree with you. All right, now back in the present, Courtney has the JSA artifact scattered all over her bed. We see Dr. Midnight's goggles, Our Man's hourglass, Wildcat's cowl, Johnny Thunder's pen, and of course the coolest one, the Green Lantern.
That was broken. I thought that was interesting. So I am excited to potentially see what that story is, hopefully.
Hopefully. Now, even though Pat is dead set against it, Courtney is bound and determined to recruit new members of the JSA. That day at school, Courtney clashes with Cindy. Oh, that was her. That's the mean girl's name. It's Cindy, who is bullying Yolanda. Now, Courtney finds Yolanda boxing in the school gym and invites her over to her house for dinner that night. When Yolanda asks her parents, they tell her no. And we find out she's been grounded ever since she sent that pic. And her parents don't even bring her to church anymore. The next day, Courtney reveals to Yolanda that she accidentally blew up Henry's car. And so Yolanda's kind of intrigued. She sneaks out of her house that night and comes over to Courtney's, where she explains she's Stargirl and wants Yolanda to be the new Wildcat. The two girls in costume decide to follow Henry to his father, Brainwave, at the hospital. And they get a peek at the visitor's log, and they try to ID other villains. What's interesting is when Yolanda's hiding in Brainwave's room, Principal Bowen slips in and begins playing the violin for Brainwave. And it got me wondering, is she a villain too? And what is her power, and what the heck is she trying to do to Brainwave?
Is she isn't there a villain that was like the Fiddler or something like that? Like a 1960s Silver Age villain?
Probably, but I don't.
I don't remember what his name was, but there absolutely was a villain that played the violin as like a weaponized violin, basically. I kind of hope that that's a version of that character, because that would be hilarious.
Now the girls flee the hospital, but not without Beth, the other loser girl that was at the loser table, who was visiting her doctor mom there, taking notice. And I'm guessing Beth is going to be joining the new JSA in the near future. Just feels like that.
I really liked the main part of this story, which was like Courtney and Yolanda effectively learning how to be a Wildcat. It was perfect to me in that it felt exactly like if two teenagers got these costumes and powers and then were like, well, now what do we do? They were so aimless, right? Like they got the costume and they kind of tested out the powers, right? Doing all that. That was cool. And then they're sort of just like, and now what do we do? Like, you're like, we're ready to be superheroes, but like, do we just like walk around on the street and just wait for crime to happen? Like, I just thought I thought the show captured that really well. And again, like when they're leaving the hospital and Courtney stupidly refers to her as Yolanda out loud. And that's how the other girl figures out who they are while she sees them from the ground. I thought it was just perfect. It was like exactly how I think two kids would act in that situation where they're like, oh, this is really cool. Now what?
Yeah, exactly. I really like the scenes with them too. I think that's really why I really enjoyed this episode is because of those scenes. It was just fun.
And I think it's something that the Shazam movie did well too, where you have like, again, a kid obtain these powers and then it's sort of like, I don't know what to, like, I know I'm supposed to be a superhero now, but like, how do you do that? Right. You don't like, you know what I mean? I feel like a lot of shows, sometimes they just sort of conveniently have like the reason to exist, sort of like there's the, you know, they have the costume. There's an obvious thing for them to go do with it. And I assume that Geoff Johns is one of the reasons that we're seeing something like that. I don't think it's a coincidence that he was involved in both projects.
I don't think so either. And you bring up a good point, because in the Shazam movie, one of the funny scenes is when they go in the convenience store, try to buy beer, and then end up coming out with all that other junk food.
Right. And even within that, like, Shazam ends up with a moment where he needs to be a hero, right? And even in that, he's sort of like, I don't know. It feels accurate, if that makes sense. Like, it just, I don't know, it felt real in that regard. I like that. I did think one thing I was really amused by in this episode was how they had to like spice up who Wildcat is with the tech suit, because it's just like Ted Grant is literally just a dude wearing a cat mask, right?
Yeah.
In the comics, he's just a guy that like, he's just a boxer that wears a cat mask effectively. He's good at what he does, sure, but like, you know, that's it. That's all he is to it. And I thought initially that's what the show was going to have to do. Be like, Courtney sees all like, oh, you box, that works, right? Like, just put a cat mask on and then box.
Yeah, I like the fact that a suit had some tech to it too. It was cool how it was all smelly and yucky, and then it reformed to her body and stuff. I thought that was pretty cool.
I thought it was cool, and I think it also hinted at what we're going to kind of see, I think, with this new young JSA, is obviously them tweaking the way the heroes work a little bit to show, like, because like I was talking about last episode, like with the Flash, like, what are you going to do? Like, just plop the helmet on and they get super speed? I thought this episode answered that to a certain extent, because, like, again, with Wildcat, my question was, so she just coincidentally finds, you know, somebody who is a boxer and that turns them into somebody as effective as Wildcat? And we kind of got the answer to that, right? With,
right.
Well, there's the suit clearly has a heavy involvement in her abilities. And I think I don't have a problem with that at all. I think that is a good solution to the problem.
I think so, too. Also in this episode, we go to the Injustice Society headquarters. And Dr. Ido, a.k.a. Dragon King, gets permission from Icicle to build his machine for Project New America. And I have to say, I really like Dragon King's costume. I thought they did a good job with it.
I don't know who that character is, I have to admit. Like, I know on the show, but like, I don't know that character from the comics at all.
I don't know him either, but I just thought he had a cool costume.
It was interesting. I am curious to see what they do with that villain, especially because it was such an unknown. Like, Icicle is not, I would argue, not a major villain at all. In comics, like, I know he is, right? Even before he appeared on The Flash, like, I knew he existed. I knew who he was. I'm sure he does. I'm confident that he exists. I've not read those stories. So I'm curious to find out more about him.
Yeah, I don't know him either. So Denise, the widow of the wizard, shows up at Pat's auto body shop, rattled by her son and husband's death. Later, picking up her fixed vehicle, she shares with Pat that she is leaving Blue Valley for good, warning him, do not trust this town. And then later, while coming through the local junkyard for parts, Pat spots Denise's cat. Then he finds Denise's vehicle, emptied of all belonging except for the magician's hat. Found that kind of creepy.
I was a little, I don't know what the right word is, confused, I don't know. by the interaction that she had with him at the end. Like, I understood what she was trying to hint at, and it seemed like she sort of knew who he was. And I was a little confused by Luke Wilson's non-reaction. I don't know if that makes sense initially.
I know what you're talking about. I mean, he does understand that she's kind of rattled, but.
Right. Well, it seems like he's piecing it together. It seems like when he looks in her car and sees the wizard's, the wand, he sort of is like, is that what I think? Like, you can see the gears turning in his head.
Yeah.
To Wilson's credit, like in his acting, you can see the gears turning. I guess I was just surprised that, and it felt almost like they re-recorded something there. I don't know about you. I don't think he's saying the things that he's like, we hear him like calling after her as she drives away. I don't think he said that originally. It was weird, like the dialogue for it, and maybe he was supposed to, and they it felt like we were getting a voiceover there.
Huh. I'd have to rewatch that.
I don't know if you noticed that. It's a very subtle thing, and I admit I could be wrong, or it was meant to be that way, and that was just how they filmed it, was with the voice. But, like, he's definitely not – he is not saying that in that shot. The words that we hear, like we're seeing him from behind watching her drive away, and we're hearing him talk. I feel very confident that he is not actually saying that in the scene that they were shooting.
Okay. I didn't catch that.
I mean, like I said, I will admit that I could be wrong about it, but as I was watching, I was like, that sounded like a voiceover. That sounded, you know what I mean? Like, you get those where you can kind of tell that they went back and re-added a line or like re-recorded over a different line.
Right.
I was like, that didn't sound like that. That dialogue or the audio didn't sound like it belonged in that scene. I almost wonder if there was something else. I wonder if they originally had something else or something more in that scene, and then we just got like a clipped down version of it. And the reason I think that is it felt – I was intrigued by that story overall, like her attempt at trying to, you know, confide in him and him trying to kind of piece together what's going on. But it didn't feel like it felt like there was supposed to have been more with that story than what we got.
I could see that too, because it did feel like we were supposed to get more with that. And maybe there was, and then they decided to go another direction too.
Well, what I'm wondering is, to my knowledge, all the episodes that we're watching left in this season are like the episode length that they need to be to fit for a broadcast. And I'm wondering if they started cutting, like they had other stuff cut or filmed that instead of doing the like extended version on the
DC Universe
app, they started just being like, these are things that we can cut.
That could very well be.
Because it seems surprising to me that you would have filmed the first two episodes to be a certain length and then randomly changed to a different length. It seems more likely to me that all of them were filmed to be, or at least started to be filmed at a certain length, and then they changed because of the deal that got made. So I don't know. I'm wildly speculating here, but I do wonder if we're going to see more stuff like that, where there's going to be scenes that like were clearly part of a B or C plot, but it seemed like there should have maybe been a little bit more material than what we saw.
That very well could be possible.
I mean, they chose right. They focused on the correct story. So I'm not going to criticize them there, but at minimum, I would have liked a little bit more out of that storyline, just because I was interested in seeing more of the interaction between those two characters.
Right.
The last thing I wanted to ask you in regard to this episode, the son is almost certainly getting that pen, right?
Yeah.
I feel super confident about that. When she plopped that in her pen holder, I was like, I feel like at minimum, he's at least going to interact with it. If he's not going to be like the new, you know, guy that has that or whatever, I feel like he's at least going to interact with it once.
Yeah, at least. He's going to go in to borrow a pen and something's going to happen. Though that kid doesn't feel much like a superhero to me.
He's kind of a jerk, right? Like, I'm a little bit surprised at the characterization that they're going with it, because I don't think the son is meant to be an a-hole, so to speak.
But, like, he frequently comes across that way.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
And I don't know that how intentional that is. It almost feels like he's meant to be, like, a sarcastic comedic sidekick, but it's almost, it always is, like, a little bit too mean sarcastic.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'll be curious. They're definitely going to do more with that character at some point. At least I hope so. Because as of now, he doesn't add much to the show. It's just, like, he just shows up to eat junk food every episode.
Yeah, and be a nuisance.
And be a nuisance, which is fine, but, like, at a certain point, like, do something with the character or just drop it. So I imagine that, I feel really confident he's going to end up getting that pen.
I tend to agree with you. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
Yeah, so, I mean, we've obviously, if you're curious, we've reviewed the entire series on our podcast, but if you enjoyed death metal, check out the series that came before it, Dark Knight Metal, and then also Snyder's Justice League run is equally important in the lead up to this run. And like we talked about, it the end of his Justice League run, so it's the first time I've seen Snyder lay out that thesis of, like, stop rebooting comics. But anyway, like I said, on our podcast, we have reviewed both that run in Justice League and also the previous Metal event comic. It's a lot of crazy stuff happens. There are some really cool scenes. It's not always a coherent story, but like he says in this comic here with Sergeant Rock, the main point of, I'd argue, both Metal comics is to have fun. And in a lot of ways, he does succeed in that.
Yep, he sure does. All right, and for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about the DC deck building game Rebirth. I got it for Father's Day, and I opened it up yesterday, and it's a deck building game, but it's totally different. It's got locations you can move to and stuff. I don't know. I'm going to have to read the directions and figure it out, but I'm very excited about playing it. So I didn't want to play it yesterday because I was tired, and I didn't want to have to learn a new game. So we played the old version. But I'm looking forward to playing this next weekend.
So, out of curiosity, does it incorporate with the old cards, or is it a completely standalone thing?
It looks like it's a standalone thing. I don't think it can play with the other cards.
That's interesting.
So, and it has scenarios in it that the other ones don't. I don't know. I'm going to have to read the instructions and find out. But it has Simon, Baz, and it has Jessica Cruz and stuff, so... Very excited
awesome.
About that.
You're definitely going to need to give us an update in a future podcast.
I sure will. All right. Well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message. Or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right. Coming up next week, we're going to be talking Aquaman, Batman, Justice League, Justice League Dark, Jimmy Olsen, Batman The Adventures Continue, number 6, The Green Lantern, 80th Anniversary, 100-page Super Spectacular. We got Stargirl and the season premiere of Doom Patrol. So, excited about that. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
You're ready to move out.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.